Next, I'd like to introduce John Balaban. The first time John I ever heard you read was at a Poets Against the War meeting outside the Regulator in Durham, and so of course I was pleased to see some great poets a part of that group. So anyway, it's my pleasure to introduce John Balaban.
Thank you, Patrick. Thank you for this wonderful idea and for your friends in Carrboro that made this happen. It's a surprise. I've never been to Carrboro before, and it's hard to believe there's a poetry festival this undertaking. I hope it goes on. I thought I'd read some poems and maybe a translation or two that have to do with this peculiar business of poetry. And the first one is called Georgi Borishov in Paris. Borishov is a friend of mine, a Bulgarian poet. He was a very fine poet and a very bad drinker, and his poem is about catching up with him in Paris at an apartment his wife had in one of the few high-rises in that city. The Slavic poet sips his morning vodka. His mind is troubled as the river sliding down below the 22nd floor of his apartment on the Seine, where a barge cuts the surface to thread Pont Mirabeau. He knows that words are fading from books, from poems of Pushkin, from Apollinaire's, from poems he wrote when talking in his dreams. Words are disappearing, leaving pages bare. Next door, an office complex bustles like a hive, its workers tending cells inside the glassed-in combs. He stares into their cubicles. It sours his vodka. Their tower has become a heap of drying bones. But what can poets do about the missing words, gone even from those lips that long to say them like wishes, floating off above the river like coins tossed from barges, bridges, bateau-mouche? Where else is this happening? Is it happening at home? In a world reduced to billboards, he would be totally unnerved. The strangely exiled poet has been drinking for 10 days, but this has only sharpened his worry about the words. One of the great poets of Vietnam is Ho Xuân Hương, a Vietnamese woman, an aristocrat, but also a concubine who lived around 1800. And she's remembered, she's famous in her own time, and she's famous today in Vietnam for her exquisite saving grace in bringing the revelation of poetry, sort of the life-saving revelations of poetry, into our lives. And I'll try to read a poem of hers in Vietnamese for you, just so you can get an idea of what it sounds like. Although I'm sure others could read it better, let me try. It's called, in Vietnamese, Đại Khăn Xuân. Em ai chiều xuân tôi khăn đại, lang lang chẳng bọn chứ chẳng ai, ba hỏi chiều mẫu chương gạm sóng, một vương thăng thương nước lọn trời, bé ai nghìn trường còn thạch cắn, ngừng an muôn trường dây coi voi, nào nào khúc lạc là đào tá, khúc lạc là đây chín rõ mùi. Spring Watching Pavilion. A gentle spring evening arrives airily, unclouded by worldly dust. Three times the bell tolls echoes like a wave. We see heaven upside down in sad puddles. Love's vast sea cannot be emptied, and seas of grace flow easily everywhere. Where is Nirvana? Nirvana is here, 9 times out of 10. Ha ha. Here's another one called Dukkan, which is country scene. I'll just do the English, and then I'll read one more poem of my own. Country scene. The waterfall plunges in mist. Who can describe this desolate scene? The long white river sliding through the emerald shadows of the ancient canopy. A shepherd's horn echoing in the valley. Fishnet stretched to dry on sandy flats. A bell is tolling, tolling, fading, just like love. Only poetry lasts. Actually, I have a lot more time than I thought. I'll read two poems. This is called The Lives of the Poets. It has an epigraph from Saul Bellow's Humboldt's Gift. You know that novel about Delmore Schwartz, desperate poet who life sort of ended in manic wretchedness? It was Bellow's friend and probably tried to sue Bellow like he's tried to sue many of his friends over imagined grievances. And so the poem begins with an epigraph from that book, and it's this: the country is proud of its dead poets. It takes terrific satisfaction in the poet's testimony that America is too tough, too big, too much, too rugged, that American reality is overpowering. So poets are loved, but love just because they can't make it here. Fact is, it's a reality that grinds us all, even those who whisper to themselves, quote, if I were not such a corrupt, unfeeling bastard, creep, thief, and vulture, I couldn't make it here either. Still, they collapse at meetings on tennis courts, pig vows going kaboom in their hearts, pitching into their Wall Street journals as the train lurches home to the Hamptons, as the cab crawls uptown to the condo on the park. Dying in their dandruff on their treadmills, taking their sips of dioxin sewage, eyes fried by computer screens and boredom, the huge need for cocaine said it all. Well, these were the thoughts that came to me on a high wooded bluff outside Port Townsend just after Levertov died. Her Times obit ran next to some admirals from the Vietnam War, apparent adversaries now side by side, true to their conflicting truths, the hand that gives, the hand that takes. All about me clumps of sweet pea, purples and pinks cascaded down the grassy hillsides as dawn mist raveled a wreath through inky tops of Douglas firs, and far off the distant straits of Juan de Fuca pooled tides below a cloud bank, and furry foghorns called each to each. Can sung words calm the guns of the steeled fleet? Quote, Orpheus moves stones and trees, but a poet can't perform a hysterectomy or send a vehicle out of the solar system. At Sotheby's, Ginsberg's top hat went for $258 after the bad gray poet launched his final exhalation. Unsettled, I drove to Seattle's Blue Moon Tavern, where I annoyed a man in straggly hair and baseball cap reading Cicero through wire rims. Hunched at the beat-up bar and railing at me, man, I told you, I don't know those people. My mistake. He looked like he might have, perched on that bar stool reading Latin for decades since abandoning a dissertation. But he didn't know Rettke or Hugo or Wright, whose fame framed lugubrious black and whites still hung from the rough plank walls where once they drank and howled like Humboldt. The only woman among them, Carolyn Kaiser, with her huge, sultry eyes and severe French hat, Dorothy Parker, to this Algonquin of moonstruck boozers. Quote, the weakness of the spiritual powers is proved in the childishness, madness, drunkenness, and despair of these martyrs. They succumbed, poor loonies. One thinks of Röttke weeping over a dead mouse cupped in his huge hands, or of Hugo sweating out a hangover in the bleachers of a sandlot game, Lou Welch walking off forever in the Scorpion Sierras, and, quote, Hart Crane over the side of a ship and Jarrell falling in front of a car and poor John Berryman jumping from a bridge, unquote, and Plath and Sexton gazing themselves. Delmore Schwartz, Humboldt Humbert, shouting from the moon. So praise to those still coming through on song, a bigger tribe than one can name and tough as anything put up by corporate America. Maxine Cumin with her horse broke neck, still writing, still hitching up and riding Deuter. William Meredith struggling back toward speech. Hayden Carruth raising a toast with his poet's cheap, sufficient Chardonnay. Richard Wilbur calling us to morning air awash with angels. Merwin in Hawaii, Snyder in the Sierras, both taking the nothingness of Sunyata to conjure up a habitation. Walking their Sonoma farm with Kaiser's husband John, we stopped before a storm-struck, twisted pear tree, a remnant from an orchard 100 years ago. Out of the hulk of its blackened trunk, one smooth-skinned branch sent forth some leaves. Still blooming, I said. Madly, he answered.
One more.
One last poem, which I think I read at, in front of the regulator in that Poets Against the War thing. It's called Highway 61 Revisited. Summer was flooding the city highways, bathing sycamores below the savage tenements, leafage flushed green, almost obscuring the plastic grocery bags snagged in branch tops, flapping in the roadside wind. In the whine of semis and buses and cars and vans, plastic shreds fluttering, prayer flags of the poor, as rackety apartment ACs hummed an chorus in the June cement heat, and I sped by, heading out once more for the heart of the country, rolling down Highway 61, heading west and south, lighting out again away from fanfare and drumbeats, the couples holding hands in their slow-motion leaps from the skyscraper windows, billowing smoke. In Midwestern farms, rustling wheat crowns, spreading out with alfalfa and sour gum sprouted corn, I thought I was lost in the crickets and songbirds. But tire whine and bumper glare kept me on course, and when I picked up the soldier mugged in the bus station, teeth kicked in, wallet taken, hitching back to base in Waco, to his tank repair unit, readying for another Iraqi war, I knew I was on the right road, running like a lifeline across the palm of America. In Texas, I heard voices. In the dead, ugly creosote basin of Midland, Odessa, where all across the hot mesquite horizon, oil jockeys pumped crude from the sandy waste and a billboard boasted, home of President and Mrs. George W. Bush, I had a powerful urge to pee and pulled off the highway. Taking my whiz at an Exxon, then gazing up again, I looked around when I heard a voice calling, "Help me?" Calling softly, "Can you help me?" I looked around and saw an elderly man in a battered Honda, door open, big shoes planted on the greasy cement, looking at me. "What do you need?" I asked, thinking maybe a few bucks. But he wanted me to lift his legs into his little car. Wooden legs, I could feel, heavy as cinder blocks. "Where are you headed?" I asked as he turned the key, but he just pointed his finger like a gun, said, "That way down Highway 61. I turned onto a less traveled blacktop running south past volcanic peaks to Mexico and the Big Bend. From my windshield to the horizon, dust devils swirled over the greasewood and yucca spikes, whipping up little tornadoes of dust and grit around the odd horse or pronghorns grazing with cattle. behind hundreds of miles of barbed wire fences, a dry land, old haunt of raiding Apaches, Comanches, Pancho Villa. But tonight is the summer solstice, and I'm with friends in this high desert border town rumbled by freight trains. Outside, the moon has risen over the Sierra Madres, shining on burros shuffling through willows below cottonwoods along the Rio Grande, glistening on the backs of thumb-sized toads in the stone pans where water seeps in the canyons, shining on the humble folk wading into Texas, shining on the bright empty ribbon of Highway 61, loud with strange cries echoing across America. Well, thanks.
Thank you, John.